talk with Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from outside the U.S., first, dial your access number to the USA. Then, 800-893-0903. If you're a first-time caller, call Art at 702-727-1222. From east of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, call Art at 1-800-618-8255. Or call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye.
It is. Somebody just sent me a page. I'm going to have to see if I can get this on the web. It says, mobile home tornado escape pod, and it shows this guy with his chair and his beer and his TV and stuff, and he pulls one button, and the whole thing just, it's a big circle that kind of drops down below ground where there is more beer and more TV, and it's a dumb thing, but it's funny. Cat flying through the air. Two cats flying through the air. Cute. Good morning, everybody. Also, from Jim Berkland, check this out. Art, I just heard a news report about a 5.1 magnitude quake at Bishop tonight. This one is real. The Sierras are rocking. Full moon does it again. Jim Berkland. There you are. And this, of course, in the background is Voice of an Angel, Lorena McKinnon, who I got to see up in Vancouver. Ooh, that was good. She's just as good in concert as she is here. All right, coming up in a moment, Mr. Strange, Brad Steiger, who has now authored 142 or 143 books he can't remember. The latest of which is Guardian Angels and Spirit Guides. The funny thing about being strange, and I'm a little strange too, as you well know, maybe more than a little. The funny thing about being strange is the world is catching up with us. All the things that I've talked about that have been regarded as strange in recent years are now showing up on the nightly news as the lead story, like the permanent weather change NBC talked about last night. So I don't know what that means. Maybe that means I've got to get stranger. Well, all right. Brad Steiger's unlisted phone number is... Oh, no, I'm not supposed to read that. Brad Steiger was born in Iowa on February 19th, 1936, of Norwegian, Danish, French ancestry. He has lived in New York, New Hampshire, Illinois, in Arizona, and then in 1992 returned to Iowa. He has written and written and written and written books. He has written, he's not sure, 142 or 143 books. There's a lot I could say about Brad Steiger. Most of you ought to just know him. Well, there's a whole lot I could say here. It all comes after his unlisted number. Anyway, here's Brad Steiger. Brad, hi.
Hi, Art. Great to be with you again. Always fun and exciting.
Did I throw you a little scare there?
Just a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, great to have you. So many books. You know where I want to start? I want to start with somebody sent me an email. And they're remarking on your new book, apparently a new book called... Maybe it's not so new. Alien Rapture?
That's not quite out yet.
Not quite out. Well, that's really new then, huh?
Right. And we should also, just one little thing, because some of your people are saying, hey, I bought Guardian Angels and Spirit Guides 3 years ago. This is now the mass market. The little paperback size is coming out now. So that's
it was originally a hardback.
It was originally what we call trade paperback, which is like a hardcover without the hardcover.
Oh, and so now it's soft cover.
Now it's mass market paperback available in all your stores.
Okay. But, I mean, Alien Rapture...
That is a novel.
Let me tell you what it's... Oh, yeah. A novel, really?
Mm-hmm.
With any truth at the base of it?
Yes. I served as the midwife for this particular work. A very... very brilliant gentleman named Ed Fouché,
right,
who was with Department of Defense, worked on a lot of black projects, worked in Area 51 and so forth, came to me with a rough version of a fictionalized account of his adventures as a SEAL and as a Special Forces individual. And we kind of combined a lot of characters with whom he worked on military and black projects and came up with, I think, a fantastically exciting novel.
Looking at planes like the TR-3B?
Right, right.
You know, I've got to wonder, if you were a government guy doing secret black ops work and you were retired and you couldn't talk about it, you might write a fictional account.
Yes.
And be able to say just about everything you want to say without getting in trouble.
Well, this gentleman has been a professional military man, and he did go to JAG and say, how much trouble can I get because I've taken all these oaths? They said, as long as you don't write about a project you were involved in.
I see.
So because he had a good number of compatriots, they kind of pooled their resources. I'm kind of telling a story out of school here right now, but they pooled their resources, and Ed served as the spokesperson.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay.
I will definitely see, my friend, that you get a copy as soon as it is off the press, and you should have Ed on the show.
I will do that. I'm glad I was able to pull that from you. So this wasn't even publicly really announced till now, huh?
No, it'll be out probably in another couple of weeks, Art.
All right. You have written so many books that it suggests a gazillion topics to me. There's a lot going on right now, Brad. I said it at the beginning of the hour here that I deal in the world of weird, and so do you. And to me, it looks like the mainstream press is beginning to catch up with the world of weird. I mean, it's getting as weird to watch the nightly news as it is to listen to my program a year or two ago.
Yes, I years ago had a radio show called Strange World of Brad Steiger. And it always began with the tagline that, you know, the world we all share. And, you know, it's not really strange. It's only strange from a particular perspective. And that perspective has now become broadened. As you said, my friend, people are starting to catch up with us.
Yes.
I also had a column called A Walk on the Weird Side, which I thought was kind of clever. And then a column that was, we got up to, 87 papers and Japan and India and several foreign countries with my The Strange World of Brad Steiger.
You wrote a book called Children of the Light, Children's Near-Death Experiences and How They Illuminate the Beyond. I'm really, really interested in that. Adults are one thing.
Yeah.
But children having near-death experiences, that's really something else. And what in the research for that book, what did you discover about children and NDEs?
Well, I have to say that we contacted, such as myself, because I had a near-death experience. We talked about this before when I was 11.
Yes.
Which certainly, I don't think anyone would argue, changed the course of my life.
Is that what brought you to write the book?
Oh, I think so. I think so. And Sherry also had a near-death experience when she was a child. So that led us to do that. But I'm just not one of those individuals that criticize other researchers, but we saw a TV show and they had a number of children who had had near-death experiences, and we felt almost embarrassed for the people because it seemed as though the children were just kind of feeding back or they were confused, and it made for very bad television. We decided, rightly or wrongly, but you know, you have to take a particular approach, that we would talk to adults who'd had, like we had, our lives changed by the experience, and really put it in the context of how it had affected them. And Now, again, someone could argue, well, of course, now they're older, they might color, they might forget, they might add. But you know, there's something, I know my Native American friends and the shamans I have spent so much valuable time with say that when you receive a vision, the more you talk about it, the more you tell it, the more you bring back, the more you remember, the more you're able to share. And I think there's a great deal of truth in that. Because when you're an adult, whether it's 21 or 81, and you keenly remember, I mean, I remember the experience as vividly as if it had just occurred to me, and I can see, you know, of course, how it has influenced and what it has meant to me. So it is children's experiences, yes, but it is largely, though we do have some children and teenagers in there, but largely it's from the perspective of how this has really changed the person's life.
I don't know of anybody who's had one who has not had their life changed.
No.
In one way or the other.
In one way or another.
All right. You mentioned Native Americans. A very interesting thing is occurring, Brad. For the first time ever, Native Americans, the full Hopi elders, for example, don't do broadcasts. They don't go on the air.
No, no.
And Robert Gosewell, who's kind of an intermediary for me, is now talking to two Hopi elders that we can't name yet. They're going to be on the air. They asked to actually come on the air on the 15th of this month. And here's a good bone chiller for you. The reason they want to come on the air is that prophecy, they say, is going to manifest itself in July.
Mm-hmm.
Not next, this.
This.
In other words, next month. Time is so short, according to these elders, they feel that they have no choice but to go public.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty strange. And then the other day, I got a call from Gordon Michael Scallion.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Art, we better do a show. We have to do a show because I have seen visions of massive earth changes in July. So that freaked me out a little bit. Now,
yeah.
I'm not. What's your take on prophecy? In other words, do you think that knowledge of prophecy or something bad that's going to happen can be lessened in some way by the very knowledge of it?
By knowledge of it. The analogy that I have used is we know that winter is coming. We would be foolish not to prepare for winter, but we cannot prevent winter from coming. So I know there's a whole New Age contingent out there that says, you know, if we think really positive thoughts, these things will not happen.
Yeah, I hear from them all the time.
And there may be some truth to that.
I doubt them myself.
But as I've said, you know, if you're in an elevator with 6 people, 12 people, and the cable snaps, you're all going to fall, no matter if some people say, I'm going to create my own reality, or I'm not going to participate, or I'm going to think very positive thoughts and change the outcome.
You're being very kind. There are many who say that, and they would still be little puddles when it hits, right?
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true. Unless, again, some miraculous intervention occurs. And a miraculous intervention can always occur. And I think we remain open to those possibilities. But I've become convinced, because of the time I have spent with Native Americans, the shaman, and I think you know that Sherry is part Chippewa, and she was invited to one of the kivas on the Hopi with the elders, and was, you know, privileged to be one of few people allowed to participate in that. So she's really, of course, I don't know if there are any experts or authorities in this field, but I mean, she must be rank up there very high.
Sure.
And with talking with her and talking it over, she's much firmer on that than perhaps I am, but about that these things are truly going to happen. And the shaman and the wonderful medicine people with whom I am in touch, those who have brought me into their tribes, those who have initiated me into their medicine lodges, are really telling me the same thing, that it's my friend Sun Bear once said, it's like the earth mother is like a great dog, and from time to time she just shakes her back and sends those fleas flying off.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that the fleas are evil or nasty. It's not that we're wicked or nasty and we must be punished. It's simply a cosmic calendar has rolled around, and it's wintertime again, or translation, it is the time of upheaval, volcanisms, earthquakes, etc., etc.
These really are interesting times to me. I predicted this weather change. I was talking about it 2 or 3 years ago. And tonight, all of a sudden, on NBC lead story is the weather may be changing profoundly. It may be changing permanently.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first time I've heard this said on network television the way they said it.
Yeah.
And it's as though it is all upon us now. I mean, literally, we're in the middle.
We're there.
We're in the middle of all of this, right? So it's like I've got to start covering it from a different point of view.
Right. Well, you know, that's what's so strange, and I talk to so many people, because somehow when you're talking about it, excuse me, you still feel you're back in 1970, you know, when you first started really out there, you know, shaking the bushes with this message. And now all of a sudden it dawns on even those of us who have been out there chanting about it, that we're there. We're there now.
Well, you've written a lot about mysterious powers of the mind, ESP, that sort of thing, precognition. And what I think is happening is that, yeah, we're in the middle of it, but all of a sudden a lot of people are knowing it inside of themselves
to be true.
They're having a sense about it.
But that's what the great books of prophecy have always said, that at this time, you know, your young men shall have visions, your old men shall have dreams, and so forth. So we know that in this time of transition, the seeds of awakening are sprouting forth, you know, so abundantly and so strongly in so many people. I mean, people are just awakening. It's a marvelous time. It's an exciting time.
The most sensitive first, the least sensitive, no doubt, last, or maybe not at all.
Mm-hmm.
But there is an awareness, a general awareness burgeoning everywhere. Do you think... Well, you obviously don't think that that we can ameliorate this situation in any way with positive thoughts. We're going to be a mass of jelly on the bottom of the elevator floor.
Well, what we feel is every day is Judgment Day, and how you prepare yourself is by living as noble and enriched and as in spiritual life as you possibly can, so that whatever happens, you are spiritually prepared.
As if each day were the last.
Exactly.
As one day it will be.
Yes, right.
Here's another one that killed me. I was looking through, Brad sent me a list of all his books. And when did you write Sex and the Supernatural?
You know, that is a book that's got me into more trouble.
Good.
And yet, psychiatrists, psychologists, sexologists, and some editors have said it's one of my finest works. It is a serious work that deals with the creative force. It deals with the expression of sexual energy and how it affects the paranormal. And again, I thought, this is way back, Art, in the 60s.
Oh, listen, I believe it, because whenever you talk about ghosts and poltergeists, you talk about young teenage girls with raging hormones and all that sort of thing.
Exactly, but I got into mediumship, I got into everything, and got through. I will always remember and bless Norman Mailer. I was on a panel show where everyone was just really socking it to me, but good old Norman stood by me and applauded the work and said he was going to run out right after the show and buy a copy.
All right. Well, maybe we'll talk more about it in a moment. Hold on, Brad. We're at the bottom of the hour. My guest is Brad Steiger, and we're going to be talking about the strange and the unusual this night with him, and that is right up his alley. It's what he's been doing all his life. Sex and the Supernatural. A Lancer Books, 1968. We'll have to ask about that. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. Well, all right, back now to Brad Steiger. How about that, Brad? A 5.1 at Mammoth.
Yes.
One day to be the land of a new volcano.
Yes, and St. Helens is acting up again, too. So,
I have heard a rumbling there, rumbling throughout the Northwest, volcanoes in Central America going off, Mount Popo down in Mexico, getting ready to... Oh, it's really interesting.
Yes, yes.
Now...
So right after the libido formula, we're talking about sex and the supernatural.
I very nearly made a comment during that commercial. Sex and the supernatural.
Well, you know, we were talking earlier about, you know, people catching up. Back in 68 when I wrote that, of course, I also suggested or wrote about people who claimed that they had had sexual examinations aboard UFOs, that they had had forced sex aboard UFOs, and of course people just went crazy and called me all kinds of nasty names. And now, of course, that's a standard topic.
Well, why not? I mean, in 1968, everybody was having sex with everybody anyway.
But to suggest, you know, that this was happening as part of the UFO scene, you know, was just unheard of at that time.
Outrageous.
What was I trying to do, and why was I telling such things? Well, I was being told this by people I was interviewing.
Was any of it consensual?
I'm sorry?
Was any of it consensual? Consensual sex?
Some of it was, yeah.
Because I have interviewed and made people angry by doing the interview. I interviewed a young lady here who claimed she was having sex with a extraterrestrial lizard. That really drove people crazy.
Yes, well, what I was hearing so much of at that time were young women, particularly, though there were some young men and of different ages, but primarily young women who had witnessed a UFO overflight or had a close encounter, and then later they were invaded and violated in their rooms, whether it was a college dorm or a home or an apartment or a hotel, and told these stories. They sent... some of them even sent, you know, I'm a Dean's List student, here's my grade points.
Really?
Sent me all sorts of things to show that, you know, they just weren't flakes, that they had really had this type of extraordinary experience. So I wrote about it at that time, but I say that, you know, people weren't ready yet to hear that. They weren't ready to hear about that aspect of the UFO mystery.
Well, you called it supernatural. Were you mixing UFOs into the supernatural pot?
Well, I've always put everything into the same pot because I think we're dealing with a single source phenomenon. That drives people crazy.
I do, too.
I think it is all aspects of one grand phenomenon. But people, I just had a remarkable thing happen here. I suddenly, the Des Moines Register, the big state paper here, they have an Iowa quiz every week. And my mother calls all excited because I am the Iowa quiz.
Ah, you're kidding.
No, where is Brad Steiger's hometown, the author of, get this now, 140 books on science fiction and religion?
And religion.
Now, my very first science fiction book is coming out this month, Alien Rapture. I have never written any science fiction, but I recognize that I am difficult to label. Some years ago, someone interviewed me and called me a science faction writer. Well, that's kind of cute, but it doesn't have a great deal of meaning for a lot of people. So I recognize I don't fit the categories, but no, I've always seen it as a single source phenomenon. I see the relationship between every one of those 140 topics I see as chapters of one great book or as facets of one great phenomenon. And but people don't like that. They want to split you into this and split you into that.
It is so strange that you should say this.
And now back. back to the best of Art Bell.
From the Kingdom of Nye, Coast to Coast AM continues with Art Bell.
What did you think of the HBO series?
I thought it was great. There were high spots and low spots. I thought the stuff that Tom Hanks directed was excellent, and the other stuff was really good too. There were some of the, I guess it was, what was it, 8 hours altogether or 10? I would say 75% of it. Yeah, 75% of it was really good, I thought.
Greg, well, I thought just occasionally they began to stray from the technical. They were a little light on some of the technical side of it.
Sure.
Particularly with respect to Apollo 13.
Mm-hmm.
They could have done a lot more there, as the movie Apollo 13 demonstrated.
Yeah.
But all in all, it was good. It was fascinating. It was well done. And do you think it was pretty much accurate?
I think it was as accurate as they could make it. In other words, there were some distortions in the Harrison Storm story and the Apollo Fire story.
Kingdom of Nye. You're listening to the best of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell, recorded from an earlier broadcast.
I was talking to a person who gives a lot of money. He's a gazillionaire in Las Vegas, and he gives grants for studies of things like this. And we were talking extensively the other day, and he was wondering how best to give this money out, to pursue areas of study that would be productive in life after death and ufology, mm-hmm. and all the rest of it.
Right.
And I said, well, let me tell you something. Number one, I think that we're dealing with the same thing. It's all the same thing, somehow or another. It may be extra dimensionality. It may mm-hmm. be, who knows what it is. But whatever it is, it's a single source of something we all don't yet understand.
Right.
And he said, I agree completely.
Well, that makes three of us then.
Yeah, it does. And then he said, what do you think I could, I said, I'll tell you, here's what you could spend money on. Do another Brookings report.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Brookings report originally way back was 30 years ago now.
Right.
Said that we couldn't handle the truth if it were dropped on our heads,
mm-hmm.
whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I can think that if you were to do another full study at Brookings, you would come up with the same result today.
Probably.
That if whatever it is, whether there was a prior civilization,
mm-hmm.
whether we didn't get here on Earth as we are said to have come here, Adam and Eve and you know the rest of it, if something showed up that said all that wasn't true, we couldn't handle it.
Well, people have said to me, and I've... some people say it in an accusatory manner. Some people say it in an attitude of wonderment. How can you, and here we're talking now of the new book, Guardian Angels and Spirit Guides, Sex and the Supernatural, Other Worlds and the Universes, Gods of Aquarius, Native American Medicine Power. How can you write about so many different things? Well, as I said, to me, they are all facets of the marvelous exploration that we as spiritual entities are permitted to engage in here on planet Earth.
What do you think? What do you think guardian angels are? I mean, what are they? Where are they sourced? Are they really angels? Are they really from the other side? Are they really here to help us?
Well, here again now, we have to, when we answer that, we have to answer in regard to various cosmological reference points, depending upon our audience, and to whom precisely we are speaking.
Well, you're speaking to
now,
people
some
who are,
people got... Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to... I said when you're talking to my audience, you're talking to people who are open-minded and ready to listen.
Right. They will accept why I put guardian angels and spirit guides together, because a lot of people were upset with that. You see, strictly speaking, spirit guide is associated with the Native American tradition,
right.
With our totem. Spirit guide is what mediums say they have that takes them to the other side to get their sources. And angels, of course, come from the heavenly kingdom. I put them together in saying, we don't know. I mean, who are we to be that presumptuous, though many of us are, to make the separation? I'm saying that when from the other side or from the unseen world we receive a benevolent assistance, then that is serving the same function. Now, in the book, I also put in all the cautions about we don't worship them, we don't pray to them. And I have learned so much. Here, I've already said it once tonight, but the time I've spent with shamans from different tribes. And there, it's a dictum that when you go on your vision quest and you receive your guide, you don't then call upon your guide, you know, help me with this guide. No, I need a little help here. Help me find a parking place. That is not what a guide is for. I mean, it is simply then your assistance or your symbol to, or your contact on the other side. The same way I have had, and I write about in the book, the appearance of angels or guides in my life. I can't control this. I wouldn't presume to try. I wouldn't, and there have been times I would like to say, I need a little help here, guys. But the help has come, and in a number of instances, by entities that are just as solid as any physical entity could possibly be, to the point, as I write in the book, the first time this happened to me, I tried to punch the figure.
You tried.
It was that solid, and it took me that much by surprise.
Do you delineate between angels and guides? Do you believe they're the same thing?
I believe they are the same thing, and I give the same accounts and the same cautions and the same advice in regard to interacting with them.
All right. Well, your wife is an ordained Presbyterian minister. Sherry is that, right?
Baptist minister.
Baptist. All right. Well, Baptist. Well, then, how...
People ask about that, too.
Well, of course they do. I mean, when you write about... When we're sitting here wondering about the source of guardian angels and spirit guides, then there have got to be conversations that take place in the Steiger household about which they are and how to portray them.
Yes. The one thing that Sherry will always insist is that we put in the cautions about we do not seek, we do not pray to, we do not worship. She's very firm about, you know, the biblical admonitions. And I find those same admonitions in all cultures. They are not unique to the Judeo-Christian. This, as a Native American shaman told me, if you summon a spirit, the spirit will want something in return. Okay, now that's not a guide. That's not an angel. That is...
That's a used car dealer.
Pardon me?
It's a used car dealer.
Yeah, who wants your soul in exchange.
I want to tell you something and get your reaction to this, and I hope you didn't hear the show or hear about it so I can get your reaction. I did a show with a guy not long ago that I just can't shake. His name was Matthew Alper, and he wrote a book called The God Part of the Brain. The contention is really simple, Brad. It is that through the process of evolution, he believes in evolution. And it's possible to believe in evolution and creation simultaneously, I've always thought.
Right.
But through the process of evolution, because we are mortal beings, and because we live a very short time, and our greatest fear is death, that the brain, as a natural evolutionary function, developed what he calls the God part of the brain or the worship part of the brain.
The God module.
The God module, whatever you want to call it, that as a defensive mechanism against death. And sure enough, we discovered another new tribe, I think, today, down in South America, in the rainforest, what's left of it. And all of them worship something. Even if they've not had any contact with anybody with Bible proselytizing or anything else, in the Eastern religion or anything else. Everybody believes in something,
mm-hmm.
and I just haven't been able to shake the reasoning behind that. It seems fairly solid to me.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a natural reaction for the brain to develop this, wouldn't it?
Well, I think it's fascinating if that is an evolutionary process, and I've seen some preliminary aspects of this work with the God module, the God part of the brain.
Yeah.
It makes a great deal of sense that we would have been programmed by a divine intelligence to have that receptor within us.
You bet.
And I think we're going to find out more and more as we really find out who we really are and what our function really is.
Yes.
Which, again, some of us have had some through-a-glass, darkly visions. None of us certainly have wiped away the smudge from that glass and seen a clear view yet. But we're getting bits and pieces, and we're putting them together as long as we stay open and loving and share our research without thinking it's mine and becoming, you know, totally greed as, you know, the downfall of civilization
of
and humanity on a day-to-day personal basis and on a civilization basis.
Well, how does Brad Steiger know, or does Brad Steiger know, that the guardian angels or spirit guides, whichever you want to call them, or both, come from truly and absolutely an external source and not from the God spot in Brad's brain?
I've wrestled with that all of my life, and I have been, I don't say I'm special, but I have been blessed by having external physical manifestations that I give thanks in my prayers. And, you know, people can say delusion or whatever, but I know. And you know, it's that noetic quality, the strongest passionate UFO advocates I know are those that 10 years ago called me an idiot, and now they've had a personal experience, and no one can convince them that they didn't see the UFO or a ghost or a spirit or whatever.
Yes.
The people who have had that dramatic Saul on the road to Damascus conversionary experience. But again, the experiences I have had, the out-of-body experiences, the near-death experience, the manifestation of these entities, have convinced me. Now, I also know in my mind, because I try to be totally honest with myself, as I try to be with others, that there have been instances where I think it is that God spot. I think it is my, and what we translate that by saying our higher self now, don't
mm-hmm.
we? Or some higher aspect that is guiding me. And that's pretty darn neat, too, when you think about it. And when I get letter after letter after letter, I make no judgment, but when I read some, I to myself think, well, that was probably the higher self, that was probably the God spot, that was part of the subconscious and the same mechanism that we have in dreams. But everything's striving for our survival and for our perpetuation that keeps us moving forward. So I think it is both, but I believe that there is also the external. Now, whether these entities come from heaven, another dimension, whether I think they're probably paraphysical. They are physical in our dimension, but they can also leave our dimension very quickly. So they are paraphysical, multidimensional. I believe in beings of both benevolence and enmity toward us in the unseen world.
Yeah, by the way, I noticed you've written a number of books about UFOs, and a lot of them seem to suggest that, you know, these little people, whoever they are, or the tall ones, are not so friendly. I mean, I could go through your book titles here, but a lot of them seem to lean toward the possibility of the negative.
That was earlier in my exploration. There's a lot of this field, Art, that who you are is what you get. And I began to discover that in my research, that if you thought you're going to encounter a bug-eyed monster,
then you will?
then that's the way the phenomenon will present itself, because that's the way you will understand it.
But that suggests it is the monster from the id, then.
Oh, I think a large part it is, but it is also, I believe, an intelligence that is using our archetypes and our monster from the id to communicate, because that is the way it thinks that particular individual will best understand it and accept it.
Huh. You know what I've often wondered about? What would the world be like if suddenly we actually broke through? If the barrier between where we are now and where all these things come from actually broke down completely?
Well, I'm haunted by the encounter I had when I was 5 years old, and I caught an entity unawares looking in the kitchen window at my parents.
Right. We will expand on that after the top of the hour. You've got a good break here, so relax. And these are the things that change our lives. Brad's experience, the one you're about to hear about, for me, for my wife, it was an extremely close encounter with a large triangular UFO directly above us. Could have thrown a rock at the damn thing, silently passing above us. I mean, once you have seen one of these things, or something like this, there is nobody, nobody who can tell you it didn't happen, because it did. I'm Art Bell.
Kingdom of Nye, across the country, around the world, and throughout the universe. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the CBC Radio Network.
We were discussing what makes believers out of people, and what does it is personal experiences. For me, it was a triangular craft in the sky. For Brad Steiger, it began at about 5 years of age, Brad?
Yes, yes. And as just to underscore what you said, and I made reference to it earlier, once a person has a personal experience, then all the intellectualisms and all the jargon just fade away.
That's right.
Well, again, people can say, all right, you're only 5 years old, maybe it was a dream, whatever. I'm not going to argue that, because if it were a dream, you know, I'm 62 years old now, and it is obviously the most vivid, one of the most vivid experiences of my childhood, and certainly a dream that I remembered, but it was not a dream. It was October. There were dry leaves. We lived in a farm near a very small little town in Iowa. I heard footsteps approaching, and again, if you live in a city, that's not a big deal to hear someone walking outside your window at night. But when you live out in the plains, you do not get midnight visitors.
When I hear footsteps, I grab a gun.
Yeah, well, you're out again, out in the open.
That's right.
So, but again, some people say, well, what's the thing? You know, maybe it was the neighbor. Well, our neighbor, you see, was quite some distance away. At any rate, I heard footsteps, and then I heard the wash tub. But that we didn't have running water at that time. We didn't have electricity at that time. So it was the kerosene lamp brought the... I heard a wash tub being dragged over to the kitchen window, and I was sitting on the edge of my bed. You have to visualize now kind of an L-shaped farmhouse. And my mother finally conceded, because she's always worried that I stay up all night, and I reminded her, even as a little boy, you couldn't get me to bed. I've always been a night person. So I'm sitting on the edge of my bed, unable to sleep. It's dark. And when I sat on the edge of my bed, I could watch my parents, because it's L-shaped, and the kitchen's in the leg or the bottom of the L, so I can, you know, it's kind of like an early form of television. You know, I could see my parents in the kitchen and kind of eavesdrop on them.
Sure.
So I saw then this, first I thought it was a little man with a big hat And then as I stared at the back of his head, I guess it's that same thing, you know, if you stare at the back, they slowly turn. He slowly turned, and I saw it wasn't a head. It was just a long head. And he turned then to look directly at me, and I saw those eyes, and they were, again, I can't say color, I can't say, because this is the light from a kerosene lamp coming through the window. But it was a dark person, a dark entity, and the eyes were extremely large. They reminded me of a cat's eyes.
Mm.
And then those eyes got larger and larger and larger until the only thing in the universe were those eyes.
Oh, boy.
And the next thing I knew, it was morning. Now, when I told my parents that I had seen an elf, which is the way what I had thought I'd seen.
Sure.
My advantage was, again, of Danish extraction, and my mother, whether 'tis true or not, has always believed passionately she is directly descended from Hans Christian Andersen. So she then thought that I simply had inherited great Uncle Hans's imagination.
Uh-huh.
Now, a lot of people think my mother is right, that I have inherited a great imagination. But what that did for me, of course, at that early age, I felt that I had seen and caught something I wasn't supposed to see, and I had been able to see it, and that has driven me all of my life. And I am convinced someday I'm going to encounter that being again. I am going to catch up with him again.
You may.
And a fascinating thing happened. Now it's probably 10 years ago. Sherry and I were in Sedona, and a friend of ours does some very fine artwork. And Lou said, come to my art show. And I had told this story, of course, to friends and at lectures and so forth. And I came walking in, and I saw a sculpture that was exactly, or as close as it could, to the entity I saw when I was 5 years old.
Oh, now that would freak me out.
Oh, it did freak me out. And I said, especially in three dimensions, and in a statue. He also had a painting, but the statue just freaked me out. And I said, Lou, did you do that for my description? He looked at me and said, oh, yeah, yeah. And he says, no, I was commissioned to do that by a woman from California. Well, then, as it sometimes happens in real life, always happens in the movies, but sometimes happens in real life, this woman came walking in. Now, incredibly, we had never met.
Uh-huh.
But when we began to talk, I said, that's the entity I saw when I was five. She says, that's the entity I saw when I was five. She was a child in the neighboring town in Iowa. And on that October night, I won't say saying the same,
oh,
but
brother.
We had seen an entity like that. It had totally changed and influenced her life from the age of five. She left Iowa then. The family moved to California. We meet all these years later and share a common childhood experience that happened on an October night, 40-some, 50-some, whatever now, years ago.
That's incredible. What do you think that entity wanted? What do you think that its purpose was?
Boy, I've had all kinds of theories presented to me, like checking up on certain little children that were growing, you know. I don't know. It would only be conjecture. But that, and then my near-death experience when I died at age 11, you know, having those two experiences happen at age 5 and age 11, you know, just, again...
set you on a course.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just totally. And so that, again, I emphasize, I do not feel special, but I feel so blessed. I had answered for me, are we alone in the universe? I had that answered at age 5. No, we are not alone, either in other dimensions, other universes.
You don't think it came from the God spot. You think it was absolutely external.
I think it was absolutely external. I will always believe that. Again, the experience I recounted earlier with the being was hooded. So I'm calling the spirit guide, angel, whatever, that appeared to me, has appeared to me now three, maybe four times in my life, externally.
Do you think that before you die, that there will be proven in the world these things are real? That you will not have to have a personal experience to know it, that there will be a either a scientific or a metaphysical breakthrough, and I have no idea what direction it will come from. And as I said before, all the barriers, or at least some of the barriers, will suddenly drop, and we will actually establish contact with whatever it is.
That is my dream. That is my mission. I don't know if it will ever be realized. Maybe it is, as Goethe said, that the journey is more important than the goal. I was groomed all of my life to be, all of my young life, to be a Lutheran minister. And I really felt that was my calling. And I remember on graduation day, when the Bible department came and said, well, we have, you know, the seminary, it's all set. And I had to tell those dear, wonderful pastors from the Bible department that that wasn't going to be my path. I had changed my mind because I wanted desperately at that time, remember, I'm only 21 years old.
Right.
I wanted to establish proof. I wanted to prove what they were talking about from the pulpit. And I felt at that time I could not be satisfied with simply preaching these truths. I had to prove and demonstrate.
Yeah, it hasn't changed, has it? In other words,
no.
you still today could not accept that and move in that path because you still haven't proven it, or
no,
have you?
No, and I've realized I've given that up. I have resigned as caretaker of the universe. I realize now that all I can do to the best of my ability, Art, is to present what excites me, present what interests me in the form of books, in the forms of radio shows like this, where we're reaching people. That's all I can do. I cannot prove it to anyone. They have to have that subjective, personal experience. And I can't make that happen for people. I can only present it so that vicariously maybe people will absorb it, or vicariously they will have it become part of their lives, or they will be inspired or stimulated or provoked into seeking the spiritual truths for themselves.
Okay. Last hour, you and I kind of agreed. You took a little bit of a shot at the New Agers who say that these earth changes that we seem to be on the edge of can be modified or even erased by good thoughts and good vibrations and all the rest of it. And you gave us the analogy of the elevator. And people could rationalize all kinds of things on the way down, but when they hit the bottom, it's still Splatsville, right?
Yeah.
All right, well, I've got a fax here I want to read you, and then I'll get your reaction to it. Art, I have always respected Mr. Steiger's flat-footed hopefulness, if not optimism. So to hear him side with the pessimistic viewpoint is somewhat disturbing. I must say, I've always perceived pessimists as being emotional children who really want to think of the future in rose-colored glasses, but whose world falls so short of their hopes, they live in a kind of constant dark night of the soul. I'm a clinical depressive, a Cherokee Celtic person. In other words, I am surprised each day when I wake to find the world still in one piece. We spend our lives with one foot in Armageddon, fearing the warring violence around us. I do not believe in God. I do not believe in a divinity which shapes our ends. I am an agnostic pragmatist. All I see around me is chaos on the edge of night. I have no choice but to consciously adopt an attitude of optimism that perhaps we'll get by, that maybe we'll survive to fight another day. This has been all that has sustained the tribal peoples throughout generations. It's the only reason we continue to fight on, or else we'd resign ourselves, as did Chief Joseph, to fight more forever. I often wonder why Art is so anti-optimistic. Is it perhaps he sees something in us that is really in himself? Does he want to see the world as having once been a world of grace and gentleness? This has always been a planet of the apes. Only a sentimentalist can look at the human past and see anything but a swath of chaos, with few but shining instances, of human decency. It's that decency that allows me to continue to wake up every morning. That's what I mean by optimism.
Well, anybody who knows me knows that I am, as he has always believed me to be, a cockeyed optimist. I will never change my optimism in my faith in the indomitable human spirit. However, he mentioned the word pragmatist there.
Yeah.
And if we're not making too many, of course, the English language allows us to put all kinds of words together. So I am probably a pragmatic optimist. I have recognized through my own intense optimism that has many times had me knocked flat on my keister that we cannot lose sight of consensual reality. I believe in a separate reality, certainly, and I believe it is that separate reality we can enter into that gives us our strength and our purpose. But we also live in a consensual reality, a reality that we share with others. So I maintain the optimism, but I realize it must be tempered, it must be flavored with what is. We must accept the world as it is, and then we enter with our optimism and try to do our damnedest to change it. Mm-hmm. But we can only do that by example. And I think it has to be an example that makes some kind of consensual sense to others.
I can't imagine how you can be a cockeyed optimist and a pragmatist at the same time.
Well,
the two seem to be in complete opposition to each other.
Well, that's what I say. In the English language, we're just allowed to make all kinds of combinations and conjunctions and blending.
Present events.
In other words, I know that certain things are going to happen. I maintain my optimism that we will survive. But to say that these things are not going to happen and that bad things don't happen to good people, or that just sometimes the world seems like such a marah, such a dismal swamp, but we will survive. That's where my optimism. But I do not deny that these bad things happen and are going to happen and happen to each of us. As I say, every day is judgment day. Every day is a test day. And like Emerson said in the Great Laws of Compensation, we try to do our best to see that we win maybe a few more than we lose, or at least we keep a balance. Balance is the important thing, that we balance then our optimism with our realism, with our pragmatism, and I think that keeps us on a steady course.
Well, the only reason that I think I may be somewhat pessimistic is I interview people from all stripes. I interview Catholic priests who have advised popes. I interview remote viewers. I interview prophets like Gordon tomorrow night. I interview Native Americans. And it absolutely blows me away because they're all virtually saying roughly the same thing. And it ain't good.
Right. But, and I recognize all those same things, and I've gone through this. I mean, the lectures, time after time, where someone will say, oh, but, and then will call me. How do you call? Again, these things will happen, but we must keep our indomitable spirit strong. We must recognize that to be a human being is a marvelous thing that most of us haven't even begun to touch the capacity and the abilities that we have to get through this dismal swamp.
All right. Brad, hold on. We'll be right back. It is the bottom of the hour. Shortly, we are going to open lines. If you'd like to speak with Brad Steiger, I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. This is Art Bell, host of Coast to Coast AM. We'll have the news before the media. We'll take your calls, talk about headlines, UFOs, supernatural events, whatever's on your mind. All right, it's kind of right in line with what we've been talking about. Brad, you wrote a book called True Ghost Stories,
mm-hmm.
and another one called The World Beyond Death.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them would seem to try and dip down into this pool of proof. And, you know, as you wrote them and as you listened to people that you interviewed, did it convince you? I mean, aside from your own personal experiences, True Ghost Stories, The World Beyond Death, Ghosts Among Us, boy, you wrote and wrote and wrote about all of this.
Well, to me, as I said earlier, excuse me, having had the near-death experience, I had answered for me personally, is there something within us that survives physical death? And I had that answered for me in the affirmative when I was 11 years old. I saw, you know, again, my spirit essence moving toward the light and then returning to the body. And so I had that proven to me. So when I began the research and listened to others, I do not judge, but there are certain things you listen for. There are certain things that people will say or a certain intensity, which isn't 100% proof probably to a lot of people, but when you are an experiencer, when you have had an experience, there's a certain kind of rapport, there's a certain kind of feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly then as I interview people and hear that, or hear their experiences, hear their subjective, how it affected them, their families, and so forth, I'm not saying that someone couldn't deceive me. I'm not saying that at all. But when you spend time with someone and kind of get into their essence, you have that knowing again that this has been a true experience for them. Some people have had, I've mentioned before that I had that incredible experience of seeing the geometric figures, and I've encountered others then who have had that same encounter with the vivid geometric figures.
So have I, Brad, and let me stop you right there.
The best of Art Bell.
All right, I too have considered this as a possible solution, and I'll tell you what I think is wrong, and maybe and you can give me your argument. It seems to me that as you went right down the road where I would go, a lot of drug users in America today, cocaine, heroin, marijuana, whatever, they would surprise you. They're the people that you know. They're the people down the street. They're the people that function. They do a little coke on the weekends. They go to work. They don't get all consumed and driven into the habit and lose their homes and all the rest of that. They really are casual, functioning users in society, and they continue to work and do all the things everybody else.
Now, from the Kingdom of Nye, more Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Here again is Art.
Tomorrow night when I interview Gordon Scallion, he's one of the ones. I don't know if you know his story or not.
To some degree.
He suddenly lost his voice in the middle of a million-dollar presentation, business presentation. I mean, just flat went. They took him to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
He saw geometric patterns
mm-hmm.
during that night in the hospital.
Okay.
And a complete series of geometric patterns. And then he began to acquire this ability to see various possible futures. And so I would ask you, what do you think these geometric patterns are trying to say to us? What do they mean?
Oh, boy. I think they're almost living designs. I think they're almost living symbols that pulsate with a lifelike, if it's not life, it's a lifelike energy. And I think there is an instant communication that goes to the very essence of oneself.
Yes.
And then you will remember things as you progress. I think it's, just some of the inspirations and illumination experiences that I've had, others have had. Again, there is so much that is given so fast that the human brain cannot possibly within a moment relay it, but it may take you years. It may take you the rest of your life. So I think especially those of us who had that as children, I think are deciphering or remembering or being activated. We were activated, excuse me, and we are remembering throughout the course of our lives. I may have been given all 280 books or however many I write when I was 11 years old. I may have been given the topic, the theme, the idea, and I am remembering.
Do you wonder about that frequently?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And again, you wonder, why me? You know, that big question.
I wonder that about myself all the time.
Yeah. I mean, in the last few years, I have had so many of my close friends pass on. And again, every time you're in at the funeral, I think, you know, that could just as easily be me. We're the same age. We had the same experiences. They were vibrant, wonderful people and full of life and energy. And again, we were talking earlier about pessimism, optimism. I guess what really works for me, and Sherry and I use this all the time, this is schoolhouse earth. We are here to learn certain lessons. No one said it's going to be easy. No one said it's going to be a snap to pass the test. But we are learning, we are gaining, we are growing through our life experiences.
If we were to be graded today on the old school grading system, A, B, C, D, E, F, what do you think we would, what do you think our today's grade would be?
As a species?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know, when the year 2000, here again, you know, my idealism, when I started out age 21, I have my mission, I'm going to prove this, I'm going to prove that. I thought by the year 2000 that a new renaissance was going to come, that there would be no bigotry, there would be no prejudice, there would be no greed, there would be no war, there would be no pollution. And I see all these things. And there again, what makes it work for me, Art, is that schoolhouse earth, not everyone passes. Some people are going to have to go back and start over until they get it right.
Well, that was like a political answer. If you were to issue a grade today, collectively, to society.
Oh, you really want me to give a grade
collectively? I really want you to, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be difficult to give it for all of society. If you were just looking at society as we see it every day, you'd probably have to say D-.
Yeah, right.
But then there are always the A students, there are always the C students, there are always the B students.
But the average.
Who will bring the average up, you know.
You wrote another called Voices from Beyond. Do they prove survival?
Mm-hmm.
Do they?
Well, I think so. I think so.
What was in that book? That I am quite curious about. Voices from Beyond, as in recorded voices, as in voices that people simply hear. What kind of voices, Brad?
Yes, all of the above. What? But here again, see, I come back where we were before, Art. I spent a lot of time going to spiritualist camps and sitting in mediumistic circles and so forth. And I frustrated many, many people because I would say, but yet it could be a capacity of the human mind.
Uh-huh.
So I debate this throughout the entire book. Are we actually making contact with the spirit world, or do some people have the ability to tune into, whether you call it Akashic records or vibrations or things we don't even know yet, impressions somehow in the woodwork, we don't know. I always have that dichotomy. Is it the human mind in the incredible reach of the human mind, or are it now disembodied intelligences? And I guess I have to say it can be both, and it's very difficult to distinguish
between the two.
Between the two, but I think I have encountered or recorded or interviewed or asked enough or found enough or explored enough to say that, yes, there are genuine communications, but we have to be very cautious. We have to be very cautious. We know exactly with what we are communicating.
Okay, your personal experiences aside, what do you consider to be the best evidence of life after death?
They are those cases where information is given that ostensibly no living human would have known, where a will is hidden, where an insurance policy is hidden, where some particular document or whatever. A message then comes through, gives explicit directions where something can be found, mm-hmm. and it is located there. Now, again, someone could say, but could that be the incredible reach of the human mind? Well, you know, you can go on and on with that. But it would seem to me in cases like that, where information is disclosed that was not known, consciously or unconsciously, by any living being, that it does prove communication.
I was speaking with a doctor the other night about near-death experiences, and he was absolutely convinced they are real.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me several instances of people who have risen above their bodies and were able mm-hmm. to read things that they could not possibly
right.
have, not possibly
mm-hmm.
have known. Heard conversations that went on, all the rest of it, they could not possibly have known. These people absolutely were out of their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And out of body is something I think we talked about on a previous show. We got
sure.
into in some detail. But you definitely believe, don't you, it's possible to leave your body?
Yes, I do. I believe it happens naturally. I think with cautions, I'm continually being asked by people, how do I do it, how do I do it? And I think
yes.
that can be dangerous, you know. I don't like to have people sitting there, you know, trying to. I think these things, all of these things are, I think, are very natural. They are what it is to be human. And if we simply, you know, allow ourselves to be, yes, I do present exercises and techniques that will encourage. Now, that's all I say is encourage, because it really, one thing I see lacking, pardon me, I'm 62 now, so I'm getting a little grumpy, but I do see a lack of discipline among a lot of people today, a lack of true scholarship, and just the desire to really work and to achieve this whole instantaneous wish fulfillment that our society is locked into does depress and upset me sometimes. I think we cannot have these gifts of the Spirit. Oh, yes, 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 there is always the turning the corner and having the beam of light like Saul on the road to Damascus, but most of the people have the monastic living in the cell, working at it, achieving it, disciplining, studying years and years and years before those things are achieved. So, again, they cannot be rushed. They cannot be pushed. You can't take a rosebud and pick it open and make it bloom before it's time.
Yeah, but if you can really leave your body, then all the rest of it is true, too.
Well, I think so, and I think this is the great capacity that the human being has. This is, it has been said that this, above all other phenomenon, this is the crux. This is the essence of it. If the human spirit can leave the body before death, then, as you said, this is the apex. This proves it all. This establishes it all. And I believe that the people who've had near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, have their own personal proof. And once you have had that personal proof, again, as we were saying, no one can dissuade you. No one can present an argument that makes sense because you know.
But I haven't had that. I've seen this triangular UFO up close,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know where it's from.
No.
Now, I was chatting with a doctor the other night, and I said, we were talking about if you had enough money to do research and ethics and morality wasn't a problem. You know, you can clinically kill somebody.
Art.
Well, you can, and if you've got a good medical team there, you can clinically kill them for quite a good period of time, bringing them back with a reasonable amount of assurance of coming back.
Well, you've seen Flatliners, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that's a movie, but the reality is it can be done.
Yeah.
And I asked him if he would like to do that kind of research, and he said, you bet. He said, you bet. And if I were presented with that opportunity, I might try it.
Well, a dear friend who is a mentor to me, he's passed on and made the final transition. He did do that with a team of doctors.
He did?
And that's what proved it to him. He has, where is it? I'm trying to see it. I think Beyond the Light. Where is it?
Well,
anyway.
You're saying he really did it?
Yeah. Yeah,
how did he manage to talk a doctor or a team into that?
Well, he died in an automobile accident, quote-unquote died. They had the shroud over him. They had wheeled him down to the morgue.
Hmm.
And he came back, and he said, I have just had the most marvelous journey. And I've seen things, and I saw my body, and I saw you picking me up, and I saw you working on me, he said to his doctor friends. And so then, because they were all of a mind, they were all friends, they were all adult, and they said, let's try it. And, you know, here again, I'm not endorsing it.
No, no.
I'm simply saying that he tried it. It's an astonishing, extraordinary book, and he has passed on now. As I said, he was certainly a mentor to me in my early years. Dead ringer for Claude Rains, the actor. I mean, it's just the white hair. Just so close.
That's an incredible story.
Yeah, and I mentioned it in my One with the Light. I have a chapter on it.
And his experience?
Well, he went to different... I mean, you know, here again, people will they accept or reject, as you will, listeners.
Mm-hmm.
He went to other dimensions. He went to, explore whether you want to call it heaven or the other side, or he made contact with other entities. He put a lot of it in the book, and then a lot of it, of course, was shared with all-night discussions over coffee.
The only thing that would keep me from it, I think, would be the thought of an angry creator who would sort of tell me, you have tempted and played in an area that is mine, so you want to die, huh? Okay, fine. You're dead. And that would be that. But
Well, that's kind of a scary Twilight Zone. my dear friend and mentor had been, I think this, whatever this means, he had been reared in the Native American tradition, the Winnebago tradition. He had gone on his vision quest. He had received his guide as a young man. And I think that probably prepared him and gave him the courage to undergo on a medically controlled series of experiments.
Mm-hmm.
And especially after he had died in the morgue, covered up with a cloth, and came back. I think he saw this as part...
Did he say he duplicated the experience? In other words, the natural...
Yes, yes.
He did.
Now...
Oh, my. It's almost...
I'm always reluctant to...
Yeah, I know. It's almost dangerous for us to be even talking
right.
about this one here, I'm sure. But we're discussing this academically, at least.
Right. His book is privately published.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. I mean, he published just a few copies himself so that there would be a record. And like I say, I do make reference to it in my book, One with a Light.
You have a copy of that, do you?
Of One with a Light?
Of his private...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. All right.
Are you hinting?
Maybe a little. Yeah. Brad...
For you, anything.
Hold on, Brad. That's Brad Steiger. I'm Art Bell, and we'll be right back.
Kingdom of Nye. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again is Art.
And if you don't love me now, you'll never love me again. I can't feel
Good morning, everybody. My guest is Brad Steiger, and we're going to phones with Brad in a moment. Tomorrow night, Gordon Michael Scallion. Tell your friends, Gordon Michael Scallion, tomorrow night. And then Wednesday night, we're going to have Dean Morrow on, and the subject is going to be the truster, invented by the Israelis, and I have a working model. This incredible device will tell you whether somebody you're talking to on the phone is telling you the truth or not with an 85 percentile guaranteed success rate. It's going to change the world. And I'm not sure for a better or worse way. I guess it depends on, like everything else, how it's used. Back now to Brad Steiger. Brad, before we just leave it completely, Flatliners was a really cool movie, but they... Of course, it was Hollywood, and they had to have the awful thing from the attic.
Right.
And so they had the awful thing from the attic. But the monsters. But I'll tell you, I really think that it would be possible to do such an experiment. And if it's not a judgmental, wrathful creator on the other side who's going to say, okay, fine, fella, you're dead. But if it is whatever it is, then it should be possible to have that experience.
Well, again, I'm glad we didn't drop the subject, because I don't want you flatlining, my friend. There are natural methods. There are natural techniques. We, some years ago, accepted a challenge. They put targets for us in New York. They put some in England. We were in Chicago. They put some in Boston. And we were able to... send people out of their bodies and just even name the labels on furniture and appliances in the rooms that they had chosen and so forth.
Really?
So there are natural techniques. As I said before...
You realize if you could demonstrate that, Brad, you could take the less than amazing Randy's $1 million.
We did this live on television on ABC.
Really?
Yeah, and, that was scary because, boy, you know, that's the moment of truth when the cameras are on.
But, of course.
But we were able to accomplish this, with proper subjects and with conditioning beforehand.
And what were the comments of the observers seeing all this?
Totally blew their minds.
I bet it did. So you're saying, but I don't know if it's, I think it's the same realm, sort of. But I'm not quite sure that leaving your body and reading a label on the other side of the earth is quite the same as your soul projecting itself toward eternity. I'm not sure it's the same.
But you can make a turn, and that's where you can head. You can visit.
Can you really?
I believe so, and we've done it many, many times with individuals and subjects and come back with extraordinary information. Again, probably it's not going to satisfy every living cynic on the planet, but I think if you're at all open, we'll accept the same type of evidence that would be found in a legal court of law as to prove something is real, then I say yes.
All right, let's go to the phones. First time caller line, you're on the air with Art Bell and Brad Steiger. Hello, hello. Hello?
Hello, Art?
Yes.
I'm sorry, didn't know I was on one. Brad Steiger had written some books back in the 60s on the star people.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know if you still felt like your conclusions were valid.
I think the conclusions are valid. Many people have presented their interpretations of my conclusions, and so I don't know exactly what you're referring to.
What did you conclude?
Well, there seemed to be, I won't say there seemed to be, there are a large number of people today who are awakening to the realization that their spiritual essence has come from some other place, some other dimension,
uh-huh.
some other world. And what people have misinterpreted it is that, you know, aliens walk among us, these people are aliens. What we're talking about, or what I was talking about, is the spiritual essence within. In other words, as Jesus says, we are strangers here.
Really?
You are in this world, but you are not of it. And a lot of people are awakening like little time capsules going off in their psyches. And I've just heard from some extraordinary people, you know, some who wish to remain anonymous, but who wrote me, you know, extraordinary letters. People with, you know, high academic degrees, people in research, people in the military. I mean, you cannot name a branch of any profession that did not contact. Well over 30,000 people now have written for the questionnaire, and it's extraordinary. So, yes, we are still researching that. I think the conclusions are valid, but please understand, I'm not saying these people are alien babies. That's the way some people have misinterpreted
it. Are you saying that they are reincarnated?
That's one way to say it, or they recognize their essence has come from some other place. And, you know, that's another dimension, that's another world, that's in, you know, this is not a new concept. You know, we know that our spirits, well, some of us are convinced that, I mean, you talk about invasion of the body snatchers. In that sense, we're all body snatchers, we're all spirits, we're all souls. We have come to this planet, we are inhabiting a physical body, which we shall use for a time. And then we shall move on. Many of us have that particular philosophy. And we, those of us in religion, call it one thing. Those of us who are exploring the world might call it something else. But we're all talking about the same thing, the awareness that we are strangers in a strange land. This is not our, we are here in our spiritual essence.
All right. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Brad Steiger and Art Bell. Hi.
Hello, Mr. Steiger.
Yes.
Yes, I've been, well, on a 30-year very passive journey.
Okay.
And when you were speaking of your geometric forms,
mm-hmm.
Now, may I ask you a question?
Certainly.
When you see these forms, are you in a, coming out of a sleep, a consciousness to conscious, or from going to conscious to subconscious?
Well, please understand, sir, that I saw them when I'm having a near-death experience.
Okay.
So, as, well, I'll just tell you very briefly. I saw my bloodied, mangled body on the ground. I was moving toward the light, and I suddenly had this, I'm dying, you know, I don't want to die. And then I saw a series of geometric forms that gave me the most ecstatic peace I could ever imagine. And let me know that there was a meaning, there was a purpose. Whatever happened, it was all part of some divine plan, and we're all a part of it, and there is a meaning to life. There
right.
is a meaning to history, and that's what the symbols meant to me.
I have seen forms like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I am also, at the same time, I experience, I don't know what it is, it's like, it's not music, it's like mine started after I was in a horrific boating accident 30 years ago that I should have, I and three other people should have been killed instantly.
Okay.
For some reason, I was spared.
Mm-hmm.
And it got me thinking, why am I here? I don't know the purpose, but I knew I was here for a purpose. Whether
yes,
it is to raise me or raise my children, I don't know what.
All right. Well, that's the same thing that Gordon Michael Scallion said about the geometric patterns, though he might not be able to relate it now. At the time that he saw them, he understood it all.
Now, he mentioned the music. Art, I don't think I have ever mentioned that before, but there was the music, and I still, from time to time, hear the music, but I have not seen those symbols again.
You see, I've heard the story, Brad, from so many people who have had NDEs, but I've not heard this story from people who have simply had OBEs. I just haven't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that with an OBE you can't experience this sort of thing, but with everybody I've talked to, and I've interviewed some of the best people in the field.
Oh, I know you have.
It seems unique to the NDE.
That may be true.
Which may mean the NDE is unique, which may mean that the only way to experience it is to nearly die or to clinically die.
Well, you know, in the whole Native American shamanic tradition, you know, that's also an integral part of it. Whether it comes from a high fever, whether it comes from an accident, whether it comes from a disease, that lying, you know, the dead, so to speak, and then coming back. In almost all cultures, that is part of the requirements or initiation of a shaman. And there may be a good reason for that, Art. I mean, maybe that's what you're saying. In other words, that's when you have seen the other side. That's when you've seen the world of the grandfathers and grandmothers, the world of the spirit.
I sure would like to see it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Brad Steiger. Good morning. Where are you, please?
Good morning. This is Red in Ohio.
Yes, hi there.
I have three questions for Mr. Steiger regarding a chapter in his book, The Philadelphia Experiment and Other UFO Conspiracies.
I will try.
Okay. First of all, you make a reference to Dr. Wilhelm Reich.
Mm-hmm.
And I have tried in my used bookstores in the area to find any of Dr. Reich's books.
Really?
I found books by M.K. Jessup and other out-of-print researchers,
uh-huh.
but nothing on Mr. Reich.
Really?
Is there anywhere where his books are available?
Well, I would not think you would have a difficult time finding the works of Wilhelm Reich. Let me reach over here. This is a strange. This book surfaced from nowhere. I guess it was anticipating your question. I don't know if this is still extant or not. Let's see. Oh, probably not. There was a person. No, okay. Here again, it's a privately published book. Dear people send me a lot of those, you know, they print a few, so I don't know where you'd get this.
Mm-hmm.
I would say just keep on with your book search because they should really not be that rare. They should not be that hard to find.
Okay, and the second question is the Wilhelm Reich Foundation in Maine still in existence, do you know?
Well, that was going to be my next suggestion. Again, you know, time goes so fast, but it's not that long that I did a seminar at which his daughter was present, and it was still functioning then, so I mean, I'll give a tentative yes.
Okay, do you happen to have the address of that particular
organization? No, I don't. I mean, not at hand, I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
Not
okay.
at hand.
Okay. Was that located in Holton, Maine?
That I don't recall.
Uh-huh. Okay, and I was just wondering if perhaps you'd explain to the listeners Mr. Reich's research into orgone energy.
Well,
all right. Go ahead, give it a try, Brad.
In a kind of a capsulization.
Sure.
Okay, well, what I find fascinating about it, orgone energy, the life force, the energy, sometimes associated with sexual energy. Uh-huh. Here we're back with Sex and the Supernatural. But saying that there is a life force that can be tapped, that can be utilized. Now, what I found fascinating is that Reich went into the desert with his Orgone Buster, and he and I have some astonishing photographs of this. Some UFOs can be living creatures. Some UFOs can be living things. Maybe, you know, just as in the ocean, there are creatures all the way down at various depths. Maybe in the atmosphere, there are certain creatures that we haven't identified yet. At least that is a viable hypothesis at this point. Prove it wrong, but, you know, it seems to be. So he took photographs, and he felt that this Orgone energy that he was able to project would make them come into manifestation where they could be photographed. And so he felt that the UFO energy and the Orgone energy were harmonious or were symbiotic, and some astonishing research, which, you know, landed the man in prison, and that's where he spent his last years.
In prison?
Yeah, it was an extraordinary story, whether you agree with someone's philosophy or not. I mean, the...
Why in prison, though? What did he do during
that? Oh, that's a whole... it's very vague, and, of course, you will find those who feel that, you know, it was the government who did it, or he definitely ran afoul, whether it was the FDA or the AMA or the government or whatever. I have received all kinds of literature over the years about it. It is a controversial subject. People have to explore it, make their own decisions, but certainly I don't think you can justify, you know, having a man sent and die in prison because of his beliefs. If they can be disproven or if they can be demonstrated as injurious, then that's one thing, and the person should be made to cease. But when one is, I mean, he was an accredited scientist. Some of the theories were off the wall to some people. Some of them, I'm quite certain, will probably prove to be valid, or at least valid to some degree. And, of course, that's going to start an argument just by my saying that. But again, we have to explore these things with an attitude of openness. And I'm not giving a fair portrayal of his whole theory. I'm simply indicating what I found fascinating was the connection to UFOs.
Yeah, that is fascinating. I'm going to ask you a really off-the-wall question. There isn't going to be time for you to respond to it before we break here, but Wednesday, I have these very interesting people coming on. The Israeli government, of course, has to deal with terrorism a lot.
Yeah.
And they've done some fractal research that has resulted in this unbelievable program called the Truster. Comes from Israel.
Mm-hmm.
You simply hook it up to your phone, and in a conversation you have with somebody, it will tell you, it will actually flash up on your computer screen after it samples their voice. You know, you might say something like, how's the wife, and that sort of thing to get sort of a baseline. But with almost the accuracy of a full polygraph hooked up to you with all the wires and sensors and all the rest of it.
Was it like a PSE then?
It samples your voice.
Yeah.
And then it looks at different stress levels.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so accurate and so good that 85% of the time, slightly under that of a polygraph, it will accurately tell you whether the person you're talking to for any given statement is telling a lie or telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll get your comments on this when we come back. But I think it'll change the world. And I'm not sure for the better or for the worse.
Well, I think people have to get ready to realize what I have found.
Well, all right, now back to Brad Steiger. Brad, I wasn't kidding about this thing called the Truster. It's real and it works. And I wonder what would happen to our society if you knew, if everybody knew that they had to tell everybody else the truth. Would it be a complete societal breakdown, do you suppose?
Well, first of all, we give obeisance to that ideal every day. We say that.
I know what
that
we
is
say.
Our ideal.
Oh, that's right.
So, but again, I am nervous about any machine, because I think it will take a very skilled interpreter to distinguish between stress from some other situation and when someone is prevaricating, telling a lie.
Yes,
I'm of the generation. I mean, you can say you disagree with me. You can say I'm mistaken. You can say I'm ignorant. That won't upset me. But call me a liar, and you will see me revert to my Viking ancestors, and you'll see a berserker coming right at you because, damn it, I don't lie. But you can disagree, and you can say I'm wrong, but don't say I'm lying. Now, when part of what I've learned as an interviewer and going all around the country and going in different foreign countries is what I call the pork chop hill syndrome. Someone telling a story as if it happened to him or her and it really happened to someone else.
That's right.
They tell it so often they believe it happened to them.
That's right.
To make a long story short, here in our wonderful little Iowa community some years ago, there was a very wonderful woman who church every Sunday, the model. I mean, she was the ideal. She was to the point where, you know, I was making jokes about, you know, like, you know, if she says it, it's law. She would tell, and I heard her tell a story one time of an experience that happened to her, and everyone's laughing and everything because it's such an extraordinary experience. Well, of course, I travel a great deal, and it wasn't long before I heard the same story in another part of the country, and I realized it was an urban legend that she was projecting and saying it happened to her. Now, I heard her do that again with another popular urban legend that was going the rounds, and when I suggested, not to her, but just to someone else, that she might not really have had that happen to her,
uh-huh.
I was nearly beheaded. I mean, it was as if I had insulted the you know,
yep.
Queen Elizabeth in the 16th century, you know, back in those days. She, the way she told it, the way she reacted, I think she might have thought it happened to her. Because it sounded good and she got attention. So one thing I've learned interviewing people, whether they said they see an angel or they've seen a UFO, and sometimes editors get after me because I say the person claimed, it is alleged. They say, just say it. That's more forceful. But what I have to say as a journalist is this is what this person claimed. It may well have happened. Now, to me, 90% of the UFO experience is an aspect of the individual mystical experience. I think there's a physical part of it, maybe 10% or less. The rest is part of the individual mystical experience. So if it is an individual subjective experience, no one can really judge if it is true or false in an objective sense. It
well,
may
this
be completely
is,
true in a subjective
this
sense.
Is, but this is more pragmatic than that. In other words, they say in the manual that comes with it, for example, that somebody who is psychotic and who believes every word they're saying, even though there's not a bit of truth to it, this person is not testable.
Okay.
Not by this thing or by anything else. They
All
say
right.
that in the manual.
Okay.
In addition, if the person is elderly and has forgotten, but nevertheless they tell a story, it will be also registered as truthful. But in everyday dealings, like in business deals, and in conversations you have with people on the phone about this or that, it is nearly impeccable in terms of catching a lie.
So if you're talking to me and I say, yes, Art, and when the car hit me, it just hurt my neck terribly. I think I have whiplash.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. That, it seems to me, has tremendous implications for society.
Well, it does, if it is not abused.
Well, boy. Put that if about up there at the top with the tallest building in the world.
Yeah.
That's a big if.
That is a big if.
All right. Well, I just thought I'd ask. It's very intriguing. First time caller line, you're on the air with Brad Steiger. Hi.
Hi. My name's Wolf, and I'm calling from the Mendocino Coast. And first, I'd like to thank you, Mr. Bell, just for doing this show.
Oh, sure.
And putting this information out to the public. And my question for Mr. Steiger is, have you done any investigation into Aboriginal dream time? And if you did, what did you learn?
If you mean Aboriginal...
Like in Australia.
Yeah, okay. Because Aboriginal also means our own Aboriginal
right.
people, of course. So on this continent, yes, I have done a great deal of research with Aboriginal Dean Time, but I've not done any with the Australian people, other than correspondence and people who have sent me material, but no direct experience.
But it's, you would say it's pretty much the same.
Oh, yes.
Dean Time.
I mean, I would say that. Yes, I would say it is the same.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you.
I think that's really important that Australian Aborigines, American Natives, really, they've got about the same message. And that too, should be telling people something.
Yes.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Brad Steiger and Art Bell. Hi.
A D minus? Whoa, that is something. I thought at least a C. This is Paul calling from KFYI Country down in Phoenix.
Yes.
And I had a question here. I'm going through kind of a psychic flux. Now, I've had my own experiences seeing people after they had died. Once I lived in a cottage in the rear where this gentleman walked in while I was having breakfast, walked through the window, and stood there. I could only see him from the waist up, green sweater, gray hair. I didn't know who he was. I had just moved in that week. And I talked to the landlady, and lo and behold, she goes in her bedroom and comes out with this photograph of her father wearing the green sweater and all, which, you know, was like, oh, here we go again. But I had more experiences in the past, and the one thing I was going to ask, I didn't know if it was the times we're in or if something's going on that's going to pop with me, but when I passed 50, I don't seem to, even while in meditation, get that closeness to the spiritual side. The closeness where, for guidance, the closeness to God, if you want to say. But for some reason, it's getting harder and harder to get that comforter to be around more. And I just wondered if that's happening to other people or...
Oh, my guess is it is, Brad. Again, I had a doctor on that I interviewed recently about this, and he said, you know, children constantly are experiencers of all kinds of things, and it is thrashed out of them psychologically, in effect. Their parents tell them it was just a dream, it's just your imagination, it's just this, it's just that, it's not real. And eventually their little brains are conditioned to reject that kind of input as they get older and they get older and they get older. It doesn't happen with everybody, but it happens with more than not.
Right. But here's a gentleman who said past 50, when he's had this, and now it's beginning to diminish. I would think it might be something that your own individual quest is telling you to emphasize. And, of course, not knowing... you know, the details of your life. I couldn't be more specific, but...
Could ask questions like, do you do drugs? Do you drink? I think these things probably get in the way.
Is he still on the line?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm playing it safe here. I'm saying you could ask questions like that.
Well, you can. And again, is there, like you said, the comforter, which in Christian context is the Holy Spirit, we know. He says he doesn't feel that. It seems the people, and no, this is not judgmental. I'm just saying the feedback I'm getting is that the people who are contacting me seem to be feeling it more and seem to be feeling the intensity of these times, whether you consider them the end times, the transition times, or simply, you know, we're hitting the year 2000 and it has no other meaning than that. But there is an atmosphere, there is an attitude, there is a flavor to these times. There's no question about that, however you want to define it. And it seems to me the majority of people I'm hearing from are feeling an intensification right now. So, again, you know, we would have to visit with the gentleman much... In greater detail to be able to be specific.
Maybe his eventual destination is changing.
Well, that could be. And that this is what it could be telling him, that he needs to reevaluate.
Yeah. All safe to say now that he's off the line. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Brad Steiger. Hello.
Hello. I have two questions for Mr. Steiger.
Sure.
The first question is, you were telling about the entity that you saw looking in at your parents when you were five.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was curious to know if the next morning you went out to see if the washtub was still under the window.
You know, that's something I've never been asked, but immediately the response that came to me is that it was. Because, you see, at that time, the well, we had to pump the water.
Uh-huh.
And the wash tub was used as a wash tub, but it's also used as like an overflow, you know, so you wouldn't waste any water. And, you know, it seems to me that it was.
Amazing. The other question I have is, I guess about 7 or 8 years ago, I began to see things. And at first I thought I was losing my mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd see, like, people or creatures that weren't exactly like regular animals. And quite frankly, it scares the hell out of me when it happens.
Yeah.
And but I was wondering what maybe I could do, because it usually only lasts like a few seconds. And I was wondering what maybe I could do to, you know, to draw out the contact and maybe find out, you know, what they're trying to tell me.
Yeah, that would be what I would do. But again, I would do it very cautiously because the deceivers are out there. The disruptors.
Here's the hell of me.
So again, I'm just going to say it as simply as I can. Surround yourself with the golden light or white light or protection. You know, if you want to say a prayer, but emphasize that you want only the positive. And if there is a communication, don't fall for any, grandiose promises or claims.
Uh-huh.
If they are benevolent, then first of all, they're not going to be bothering you. That's kind of one. But if you're aware of them, as many of us are from time to time, then, you know, natural human curiosity wants to know, what do you want? You know, what's next? So proceed with caution. Don't be deceived, surround yourself with the white light of protection and let it know that you want let them know you want only the good and what is of God, Great Spirit, the oneness.
I see. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. I interview frequently Father Malachi Martin.
Mm-hmm.
You know Malachi or
sure.
Heard of him.
Sure.
He says, Brad, and this really is frightening, that in the area that he presides over in the Northeast in New York City and surrounding area, there is, in recent years, an 800% increase in the amount of possession and evil.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, possession that actually gets to his level. 800%. That's a big, big increase, too much for my taste, in evil.
Mm-hmm.
Just very recently.
Mm-hmm.
How do you react to that?
Well, that seems like an extraordinary high percentage, but I think a few years ago, I would have probably laughed and poo-pooed that, and evil is only a concept, it's only a state of mind. But again, as we proceed, and even though we're cockeyed optimists, we do become pragmatic cockeyed optimists, and we recognize and we learn through sometimes painful experience that evil does exist.
Well, I would say, what do you mean, we, Tonto? I'm pretty pessimistic, and I somebody sent me a list of school killings the other day.
Right.
Children who are really young,
mm-hmm.
who don't care about their own lives,
mm-hmm.
and sure as hell don't care about yours or mine.
Mm-mm. Mm-hmm.
They don't care about anything. It's like they're soulless little creatures, and we've got an awful lot of that going on right now.
Sherry and I were watching the news the other night when that one of the latest came,
yeah.
the Oregon one,
yeah.
and we said, possession is as good an answer as any, because there is no explanation. I mean, there is no reason. And when these people are interviewed and the families are interviewed, there is no reason. Now, again, of course, other people will pull out their hair in dismay at hearing me say such a thing, but in line with Reverend Martin, Malachi Martin. Again, there is something afoot. This is a time of testing on Schoolhouse Earth. And that's why I told this sincere gentleman who called, don't fall for any deception. You know, be very wary, be very cautious, test the spirits as we are told to do in Scripture.
Well, we've got the old model of the evil side offering deals.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if the good side offers deals.
The good side offers opportunities, no deals.
Well said. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Brad Steiger. Hi.
This is Diesel from Bend.
Bend, Oregon?
No, I'm sorry. Sully Duncan, a band out here in Phoenix.
Okay.
But I'm actually calling in because I had a question about time.
Time?
Mr. Bell, I do listen to your show frequently. In fact, I've become sort of attached to it, lost a lot of sleep. So I do think of that, but I enjoy the
Is that the time? Is that the time question? Or?
That is not the time question. Actually, the time question is I've been noticing lately we live in a digital age. I've been noticing lately on clocks when, you know, when things are sort of going right, it seems as though I'll walk into a room and there's a certain key combination of numbers, like 1111,
mm-hmm.
1023,
mm-hmm.
maybe like 123, 1234, and it seems as though it only occurs when I'm sort of on a good vibe, if you know what I mean. I see it often. I notice it a lot. I comment to it, to my friends and stuff.
I understand.
Really haven't been able to come up with any explanations. I don't know.
For me, it's 10-10.
I'm sorry?
For me, it's 10-10.
10-10, exactly. Raw of fives. I see a lot of 23. I'll look at pictures now, especially like pyramid pictures or anything, and I'll count all the spots or anything. And for the most part, I do come up with certain numbers. I don't know.
You would be astonished at the number of letters I get that say exactly what you're saying. Again,
it's a common thing, I guess.
Yeah, it's becoming a common thing. And again, just think about this, because I can't give any definite, you know, what the numbers mean. It may mean something to you, but I think what it is saying is pay attention.
Yeah,
now
definitely.
Is the time. The time is now.
Definitely.
And, you know, this is a time to be aware. This is a time to be really acutely perceptive of your environment and your opportunities. And I think we are approaching a time, a moment of truth, a moment of decision.
Very true. I live by a little saying, recognize the now. And I always take time, you know, no matter how the day is going, just to kind of stop and just, you know, get out of that. That number sequence that we've kind of created, and
mm-hmm.
just sort of watch the world go by.
I wonder if maybe the numbers might have something to do, Brad, with the geometric patterns, if there might be a relationship.
I don't know. I wish I could answer more authoritatively. I get so many of these, and people say that they have heard number sequences from UFOs. People have been walking in the woods. They've heard number sequences coming from all around them. All I can say feebly is I think it's telling us, you know, pay attention to the time. Make the best use of the time that you have. But maybe it's telling us something specifically.
All right. Brad, hold on.
It's a mystery, another mystery.
I know. There is we have a world full of mysteries, don't we? Well, listen. We're going to break here at the top of the hour. Brad Steiger is my guest, and you can see the range of subjects is all over the map, and we'll keep it that way for the final hour. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert, reminding you, tell your friends, tomorrow night, Gordon Michael Scallion. Don't touch that dial.
From the Kingdom of Nye, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. From east of the Rockies, call Art at 1-800-825-5033. west of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, at 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may fax Art at area code 702-727-8499. Please limit your faxes to one or two pages. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now again, here's Art.
Once again, here I am. Anybody out there listen to shortwave lately? And I'll tell you, the activity on the sun is absolutely incredible, and the shortwave bands are beginning to really open up big time. All right, back now to Brad Steiger. Brad, do you know the name Terrence McKenna?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know that he was, well, he's kind of the modern-day Tim Leary.
Right.
I've interviewed him a few times, so this will give you a chance to get in trouble if you want to. I'm going to read you a fax. Art, hearing your guests speak of geometric patterns and cosmic sounds associated with them reminds me of the interview you did with Terrence McKenna, in which he spoke of his experience with the drug DMT. When using that drug, he said he would always encounter these geometric entities, which he called self-transforming elf machines, and these entities seemed to communicate with him in sounds and music. I find a very interesting connection here, as this experience attributed to NDEs may be able to be reproduced through the use of this drug. And I was wondering if your guest was aware of Mr. McKenna's experience, his opinions on such things, however controversial it may be.
Yes, I am aware, and I think a very interesting situation arises here that I have dealt with. Tim Leary and I had many wonderful conversations. We were on with a person like Tim, even though we disagreed about how to get there, we could still be friends. And I remember in the 60s, back in the Village in New York, many times I was there presenting the natural way, and friends of mine were presenting LSD and other ways.
Mm-hmm.
I have never used drugs. I do not recommend drugs. I always advocate the natural way. Now, some of my drug enthusiasts would say in exasperation, yes, Brad, but you see these things normally. How can you be so elitist and deny other people taking a drug? Again, my only objection is, when it becomes recreational use, if it is done in the attitude of a preparation, of the discipline, as a ritual, then I think there can be some merit. But again, from my perspective, it is the unnatural versus the natural. Now, of course, better things through better living through chemistry, some people will say,
yep.
And that it does provide a shortcut. And then I'm called arrogant and snobbish and elitist because I insist upon discipline and the natural methods. You can argue it. And of course, I have been since the 60s. And I think it is a personal choice. I think some of these things can be replicated, but again, it's like seeing it in a mirror. I mean, there is the real, and then there is the reflection, and okay, this is a bias. You know, we all have our biases. To me, I will always prefer, looking at the real thing rather than seeing a reflection. But, of course, the advocates of drug use can say it provides a shortcut, it provides a way of getting there. I just always worry about then the people who use it recreationally or abuse it. Once again, that word we've used several times tonight. If it can be done with the same attitude of discipline and respect, then I have to concede that point.
You can't rule it out. In other words,
I can't. No, I can't.
Okay. West of the Rockies, you're on there with Brad Steiger and Art Bell.
Yes, hello, Art. This is Jerry from Seattle.
Hi, Jerry.
And I have traveled to and beyond the white light in deep meditation. My body was in no trauma whatsoever. I used the techniques that were taught to me personally by Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh. I isolated my soul. My soul traveled up through the center of the hurricane and through a very narrow passage, which I believe that Jesus referred to as the eye of the needle. I'm the only one I've ever heard say that, but that was my take on this very small passage. I flowed to the white light, under the white light, and because I had been looking for it so long, I was not afraid. I immediately recognized it as my master, Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, and I just hung around under it. I immediately apologized for wrongdoings, and then I begged to be led into heaven, but the white light did not respond. It just continued to be absolutely conscious. So since I couldn't manipulate the white light, I began to just relax and look deeper and deeper into it. The deeper I looked into it, the further I saw, until I was looking into myself through my back. At that point, a gold light from the outer reaches of the universe came to me and formed a ring, a gold ring of light around me, which had a geometric pattern, which I have described to people as a fishnet pattern. And the amazing thing is that no draftsman with the most high-tech equipment could have made a geometric pattern so perfect. Anyway, I was surrounded by this gold ring of light, and immediately my soul fell back into what I experienced as love water. It was the same substance as my soul. It was what I think is called the universal soul. I think it's what the Tibetans refer to when they say that your drop falls into the ocean. And I accomplished this not in a near-death experience. I simply took a week off from work, sat in my bed, covered my eyes, and just went for it.
Wow.
Did you send this to me?
No, I wrote it. I wrote it down, and I actually sent it to the Rajneesh newspaper, and they rejected it.
As you were saying it, it just seemed so familiar to me, as if you had sent it to me.
And could I also mention that my soul had all the sensory senses that my body had. I smelled a fragrance that was, do you remember as a child smelling a really fresh carnation?
Mm-hmm.
That incredible freshness?
Mm-hmm.
And the music was so high, it was higher than any music I've ever heard mm-hmm. anywhere.
Well,
and
this is what I was saying earlier to Art, that there are natural yeah. ways of achieving this. And you have described, and please understand how I'm saying this, almost the prototypical mystical experience of illumination or self-realization.
Well, I'll tell you, I listen to this, Brad, and I'm envious. I'm not completely embracing it. I need to somehow experience this for myself.
Well, I don't blame you one bit. You notice she said she took a week off from work. I mean, she made a commitment. She applied the discipline, and obviously, maybe she fasted, maybe she did other things, you know, but as I said, and I intended no disrespect to her experience, but I mean, she describes, you know, almost prototypically, she put it into the Rajneesh background and environment or modality, but, you know, again, it could be St. Francis or St. Anne or your guide. Depending on your cosmology, you know, the same pattern is there. It's the same pattern, in my opinion.
What would your wife say about that?
She would agree because she's had such an experience. She was out of body for almost 5 hours. And went to what she describes as, again, because of her orientation as a Christian, to the New Jerusalem.
Right.
And it's an extraordinary experience.
But if there's only one religious truth, then that's what it ought to be. I mean, it ought to be New Jerusalem for Sherry, for this caller.
who found it through Rajneesh, there should not be all these paths to the same virtual place.
Well, we have just completed a book called Touched by Heaven's Light.
Really?
And it deals with these types of things we're talking about tonight. Well, of course, we're talking about, as we always do, a myriad of topics. But what we're talking about now, I'm convinced that we create our own heaven. When I went to quote-unquote heaven at age 11, it was a heaven that I would love and expect to see. I think when Jesus says, lay up your treasures on earth, I think he's saying we're gathering the materials and the substance for our afterlife, for the heaven that we will conceptualize.
Hmm. Then there can be no single heaven, but many, many.
Well, in my house there are many mansions. And I think many mansions, again, there are many rooms, there are many doors, there are many, many approaches. It's only one, but we apprehend that oneness in terms of our own acculturation and in terms of the treasures, quote-unquote, that we have gathered while we are on Earth.
Mm-hmm. All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Brad Steiger and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi, Art. I heard y'all talking earlier about young children and how parents try to talk them out of these things that they say were their imagination.
Mm-hmm. Well, they do.
Well, as a child, my grandmother was raising me from the time when I was like 6 to about 9 and a half. And this was in Henrico County and outside of Richmond, Virginia. And we would ride down this road called Mechanicsville and pass by this Quonset Hut automobile mechanic shop. And I used to look at her and tell her all the time that I used to work in that place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would just keep telling her that, and she would always say, oh, just be quiet, you know, it's impossible, you know. And I would keep telling her that. Well, finally one day, you know, I described the whole place to her and everything. And she pulled up in there and went walking around, looking around in there, but she never said anything to me. She talked to my mom about it later on. And when I got up around about 14 or 15, me and my mom were sitting around late one night talking about it. She said, your grandmother told me that you had described that place, and it was to a T. She said mm-hmm. she was afraid to tell you about that. Well, then about a year after that, I was on the road with my dad in a band. We went to Devil's Lake, North Dakota, and we pulled up in front of this club. And I looked at him, and I told him everything, the whole layout inside this club. Now, at this point, I had never been out of Virginia or North Carolina area at all, any time in my life. You know, we walked in and looked around, and it just about knocked me over. It was
mm-hmm.
like,
mm-hmm.
bam. And I was just wondering what your aspect on that was, as far as is that like a reincarnation feeling, or is that like a telepathic type thing?
Yeah, what I feel is that you're a natural clairvoyant. And when your focus is directed for whatever reason, as a child, you may have been intrigued by the Quonset Hut mechanic, and you simply projected yourself, traveling clairvoyance, we used to call it. You simply projected your essence in there and perceived it. And the same way with past life could be, but we'd have to build a whole pattern. What did you feel? Did you feel it was you? Did you feel it was an aspect of you? The way you're describing it, I think you're a natural clairvoyant.
Hmm. That's interesting, because I still have these feelings.
Yeah, I'll bet you do.
I'm 42.
They don't go away, you know, unless you really make them go away.
Right. You know, I mean, I'll be sitting, and see, I've been studying a lot in the Bible here lately, and keeping
mm-hmm.
up world politics. And I'll go to a lot of these Bible studies and everything and be sitting there, and it's like, well, like, for instance, this past Sunday at church, what I had been studying, what our pastor started talking about, everything in our leaflet that was handed to us as far as chapters and verses to be marked out to follow him as far as what he was given, I had already been reading that, already had it marked out, and it was just like I was listening to the whole thing over again in my head.
Well, as my minister wife would say, brother, you have a gift of the Spirit.
I hope so.
Thank you for the call.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. And you take care. Maybe time for one more for the bottom of the hour. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Brad Steiger and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi, fellas. How you doing?
Great.
Good.
Art, you know, I had one of those experiences myself, and I didn't take a week off, and I didn't fast. I was just frustrated, and I went to bed one night and wanted a moment's peace. And the next thing I know, you know, I'm sort of visualizing this peacefulness to myself and then willing it on my home and my block. Next thing I know, I'm looking down on the earth, and it wasn't visualization anymore. I was looking down on the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a web, and it was shimmering. And somehow or another, I caught hold of one of those threads and just got zipped
mm-hmm.
fast to this place that was just the most incredible place.
Yeah, other people have described that web.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Mm. So you can do it. And it's not a big deal. I think a lot of it is intent. And a couple of other things.
Intent and desire.
Intent and desire, yeah. I mean, I was intent on having a moment's peace, believe me. It was one of those.
You wanted to stop the world and get off.
Yeah. I really, or come into balance with it, you know, or bring it into balance with what
I do. Sometimes you need to step off and then get balanced.
Yeah, and it was an awesome experience. And a couple of other things. The kid that called in about seeing the 1111s.
Mm-hmm.
I lost a job over that one.
All right, listen, that sounds like an interesting story, but we're at the bottom of the hour, so I'm going to ask you to hold on, okay?
Okay, thank you.
And we'll take this up after the bottom of the hour break, which is now rapidly approaching. From the high desert, where summer has still not yet arrived, such a weird weather year, this is Coast to Coast AM.
With Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. To reach Art from outside the U.S., first dial your access number to the USA, then 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye with Art Bell.
Okay, back to Brad Steiger, and this is the stretch run. It goes so quickly. Another 20 minutes and we're out of here, Brad.
Unbelievable.
I know, it always happens that way.
Unbelievable.
Even though when I'm on a network, I have to watch the clock very carefully. When we're on the air, it just goes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing to me. First time caller line, you're on the air with Brad Steiger and Art Bell. Hello. Hello, hello. Yes, sir.
Yes, my name is Nicholas in Los Angeles. Good evening, Art. Good evening, Brad.
Good evening, Nicholas.
I think early on in the program you took a rather pessimistic view about the likelihood of our avoiding upcoming Earth changes.
Mm-hmm.
And I have what I believe is good reason to be optimistic that we will, in fact, avoid all of them. And the reason I feel optimistic about this is because I have good reason to believe that people travel out of the body in spirit and heal the planet. And this is how Gordon Michael Scallion's predictions in late 95 failed to come to pass.
Well, no, he said, if you recall carefully, he said, if the following events complete themselves, it will occur. And if the cycle of four earthquakes does not complete, then the following will not occur. Now, unfortunately, you might want to listen to Moroni to Gordon Michael Scallion. He's coming on the air for a very specific reason. And he seems to feel that now they are going to complete, without going into a lot of detail. I don't want to tell you what he's going to say tomorrow night or put words in his mouth, but he now feels they're going to complete, and so do the others that I'm speaking with. Now, thank you very much for the call, but in a way, that's the kind of person that you were talking about earlier, isn't it, Brad?
Well, yeah, and I certainly think there is some truth, but and there is truth in everyone's vision. I think, again, we need to prepare ourselves spiritually. I think that's what he's advocating. I think, I pray for healing the planet every night, and I think there are those of us in spirit who are doing that. And I think in our own way, as Goethe said, if you want to clean up the world, start with your own doorstep.
Yep.
And I think that's what we must do. We must be certain that our corner is secure, and then hopefully there will be a marvelous domino effect in the whole world. But I think there are those of us of goodwill and spirit who are working for that. But that still, in my opinion, does not change the fact that certain of these earth changes are occurring because of some great cosmic calendar, not because we need to heal, not because we've been evil, not because we're being punished, but simply because, as I said before in the analogy, winter has come. So we must prepare so that we survive the winter.
Right. But I, you know, what you said earlier, maybe because of the way I am, resonated with me. You said there are a lot of New Agers out there who are just convinced they can turn it all around, and I'm not in any way down on them.
No,
I just,
no.
And it's fine, and I wish them all the luck in the world, but I still think it's going to be splat.
Well, I think, as I said before, all the prophecies, whatever credence you want to put into that, there is some particular reason why they are all focusing now. And I did a book, and I hate to mention it because we got hundreds of letters and it's out of print, but Roadmap of Time, based on the work of these scientists, who again went all the way back to tree rings and sun signs and all these things and brought it together with 1,000 people working, assisting in the research, which indicated again that there are certain upheavals on this planet which take place. And again, it has nothing to do, I mean, we're bystanders in that sense. So if we can be warned by, as it's translated by the prophecies, if we can be forewarned, then we can, with our good thoughts and our positive feelings, we can survive as a species. But many of us may not, because they have to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, or the right place at the right time, however you want to say it. So that's what we say is work on yourself, work on your spiritual development, work on your own pathway of peace, your own pathway of enlightenment, so that you are prepared for whatever eventuality comes down the pike.
All right, good. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Hello, this is Sandy from Las Vegas.
Hi, Cindy.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi. Mr. Steiger, well, separating myself from the whole situation and looking on Earth while still on my body, it seems that, you know, there's this us against the Earth and one God, and I heard someone on Art's show the other night that said, you know, we're all just a human petri dish, and we were all genetically engineered, and there's a bunch of little gods out there that are really pulling the strings. Sometimes I feel like I'm spinning my wheels. Your opinion?
Precisely, please. What are you asking me?
There was a gentleman on our show the other night that has the theory that he's interpreted from the Bible that...
Oh, I see.
We're
actually from Sumerian... Actually, ma'am, from Sumerian text, if you recall.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right. The Sumerians kept records
right.
in rock... And this goes to the Zachariah Sitchin theory of the 12th planet.
Right, right.
And the fact that we were all, are all engineered beings by gods with a small g.
With a small g.
Doesn't necessarily say there is no...
Doesn't preclude in any way the god with the big G.
That's right.
I dealt with this subject here again, as Art can check in my bibliography, back in the 60s when I wrote Worlds Before Our Own, and we've gone to Peru, we've gone here, we've gone there, we've seen the various rocks and so forth. It is a viable hypothesis that our species could have received some help along the way.
Indeed.
But that does not preclude, and in my opinion, and I emphasize this in every one of the books where I deal with this, and I've dealt with this in about six books, it does not preclude in any way God with the big G. So I don't think you need to spin your wheels. I think you need to accept this as one person's truth that was shared with you. If it feels right to you, fine. If not, reject it or question it or examine it.
Okay, good enough. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Brad Steiger and Art Bell. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is John from Philadelphia.
Yes, sir.
And I would just like to know about the event. I'm one of your many blind listeners, which you do have many. And I wanted to know about the availability of books on tape for the blind.
Oh.
You know, Brad's and yours.
Well, my book, The Quickening, is going to be available shortly on tape. The first one I did, The Art of Talk, is already available on audio tape.
I know. I spoke to you about around Christmas time about that, and I called the number you gave me, and they said it wouldn't be back in print until June.
That's right. That's right. And so it will be available soon. I don't know, Brad, what have you done? Do you have books on?
I don't know. I've given permission several times, but I don't know which titles. I frequently receive letters asking if they can put books for the blind, and I always give permission, and I don't know. You'd have to check. I had a wonderful experience where my old English teacher was able to take advantage of one of my books on tape when he his illness progressed to a certain state, which he was not blind, but he was still unable to read, and he had been such a wonderful reader. So you just have to check.
I'll check with the library.
Yeah, I always give permission, and I don't know which ones. I don't really keep track.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
All right, thank you. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Brad Steiger and Art Bell. Hi.
Hello, Art. You held me over from the bottom of the hour.
Oops. That's right. I was supposed to come back to you, wasn't I?
Yeah, you were. And you know what? The battery on my phone's probably going to die, so unless you want me to go on speakerphone, we should do this real fast.
Go.
I wondered what happened to you.
Thing, there's a book out called The 1111 Gateway, written by a woman named Solara. And it gives some pretty interesting information, and it made me feel a lot better about losing a job that I planned on retiring from. So that for that listener. And then I have an experience that happened to me when I was about 4 or 5, and I'm wondering if Mr. Steiger has experienced anything like this in the people that he's talked to. I would go to bed at night, and a black hand would come up over the back of my headboard, and I'd wake up, and it'd go back down. And my whole family was in an uproar because my mother now tells me that I would run through the house yelling "Who coots and muggers" or something crazy. And one night, after being scolded repeatedly for disrupting the household sleep, I just decided that I wasn't going to wake up. And the hand came down and it tapped me on the shoulder, went back down behind my headboard, and I never saw it again. But right after that, it's like my psychic channels just boomed open, and I started having awareness and knowledge of things that I couldn't possibly, at 4 or 5 years old, know about. The first big word I remember understanding was dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And that was at about 4. So have you talked with other people that have seen a hand?
Yeah, I think what you're not remembering is probably a class session that you were being summoned to. Do you remember going to a classroom?
I've been to classrooms since.
Okay, so many people, again, as I said, the people who filled out the questionnaire and so forth, have indicated a summoning, like a tap, as they're 4, 5, 6 years old, falling asleep, and then they remember sitting in a classroom and being taught.
And then their awarenesses opened up.
Hmm.
And this I have encountered from people around the world.
Well,
something very interesting is going on.
Thank you so much. I've wondered about that hand for 40 years.
Well, you should have asked me sooner.
Well, I just found out about it tonight, you know.
All right, good. Well, at least your phone hung in there.
It did. Thank you, gentlemen.
Right. Take care.
Thank you.
And sorry I didn't come straight back to you. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Art Bell and Brad Steiger. Hello.
How you doing?
Okay, where are you?
I'm in Cleveland, Ohio.
Yes, sir.
I was just calling to say I love your show. I listen
Thank
to it
you.
All the time.
Thank you.
And that's about it.
That's it, huh? Okay. Well, take care. It is different. That's for sure. This show is really, really, really different. It's hardly ever the same. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Art Bell and Brad Steiger. Hello. Going once. Going twice, gone. Wild card line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. You're going to have to talk right into your phone, sir. I can't hear you.
How am I doing, all right?
That's better.
Very good. Brad, I had my first experience when I was 12.
Mm-hmm.
I was tossed out of bed onto the floor, and I was sitting there, and this white light like a star came down and just spiraled right through me. And I started to yell, and my family got up, my brother, sister, my mother, father, they stood around me, and they said, what's going on? I said, can't you see this light? It came down like that about a dozen times.
Mm-hmm.
Then it quit.
Mm-hmm.
I went back to bed. Next morning when I woke up, everything was different. My birds sounded different. Everything looked different. I went to the kitchen. My mother looked different. She sounded different.
Oh.
And she said, you better not go to school. Well, we had a Redemptorist monastery there. I went to a Redemptorist priest, and I told him about it. He said, well, you better read a book called St. John of the Cross.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a book about mystical experience.
Right.
Which made sense to me. I went to a Jewish rabbi in the neighborhood. He said, oh, you have to find mystical people like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started searching. I went all the way through. I went to a monastery for 3.5 years, and I went to discovered Gurdjieff in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And then I discovered Subud, which is a very good spiritual experience. And
mm-hmm.
now I'm going to Peru to the Incas next week.
Right.
On a mystical journey. Have you been there?
Yes.
Well, I think it's worth going. What do you think?
Absolutely.
Hmm.
Absolutely. I think you will probably find a very significant answer for you there. Your pathway is a very familiar one to me. The experience, the woman just before you mentioned around 5, 6, and then again, according to the questionnaires, and now that's 30-some thousand people, around 11 or 12, the experience you described is incredibly common. And again, these patterns, these things that are happening to people, the mystical experience seems to be on the rise. And I would say that you're going to find something very significant when you get to Peru, and I'd love to hear about it.
Here's a question I have for you. It'll be the final one of the night, probably. Do you consider it possible, Brad, that there could be a planet-wide sort of a spiritual shock to the system, something that would be felt by everybody short of the second coming, something that would, without even our knowledge, virtually change us overnight?
Art, I feel that intuitively. I have felt it since I don't know, since I was, maybe after my near-death experience, since I was at least 11. I wish I could see it clearly, but I feel that intuitively, and it's part of what energizes me, it's part of what drives me, it's part of what nurtures me.
I've considered the possibility that it could just, boom, occur all at once, and I just wanted to ask you about that. All right, anyway, listen, your book, the latest, Guardian Angels and Spirit Guides.
Yeah, and there we've got some fantastic stories of hard-nosed, down-to-earth people, some without any religious experience, who just had extraordinary encounters that just turned their lives around, very much like we've been discussing tonight.
Sure.
This has a lot of my own personal experiences. Almost all of them are personal interviews. I mean, one of the stories, very quickly,
one of the founders of the Rangers, our versions of the Commandos in World War II, who was lost on the Sahara Desert for days. Everyone knew he was tough, but when they found him, how could he stay alive? He only had a canteen of water. When they found him days later, his canteen was full because an angel had come every day to fill it. When they tested the water, it had absolutely none of the elements, none of the that would be found in the Sahara region. As the Catholic priest said who analyzed it, he would be tempted to call it holy water.
Now, my.
I mean, it's an incredible story. I interviewed this man. He is the toughest, down-to-earth, had no religious background or training. But, again, when you have these experiences happen to you, and how, I mean, he was after Rommel. He got separated from his group, World War II, Sahara. He was out there for days, and his canteen was still more than half full because he said an angel filled it every day.
Oh, that's incredible.
So this book is filled with stories like that.
All right, bookstores, is it in bookstores generally?
It's in bookstores now, or I notice on your webpage, Amazon.com has it.
Yep.
But you can get both versions. People call and they want, do they have the big print? We've got both the big print, so you can order that, or you can get the mass market edition. So it's out in the large and the small editions, so you can order either one. Or go to your local bookstore.
Either your 142nd or 143rd book.
Well, that's coming up.
All right, Brad, as always, there went the time.
I loved it. It was, again, exciting, filled with wonderful questions, wonderful talk. I love it.
Take care, my friend.
You too.
Till next time. That's Brad Steiger, folks. There's nobody else like him. All right, tomorrow night, please inform your friends and family. Gordon Michael Scallion, very rare appearances by Gordon. He wants to be here tomorrow night because he has something to say to you. From the high desert, good night.